You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Ramil, and we're here with part two of the end of season mailbag. So many questions. We had to break it up into two parts. If you haven't listened to part one, go back and listen to that, or listen to this and then go back. It doesn't really matter what order, but let's get right into it. This question from Taylor Monk. All this Carmelo Anthony talk has got me thinking. What if the Heat offered them Justice Winslow and Tyler Johnson with Josh McRoberts to offload some cap space from Melo? That would intrigue me a little. However, instead of an overpaid Tyler Johnson, we get stuck with an overpaid Carmelo Anthony at a much higher price. I still think we'd be better off without trading for Melo's bad contract and going a separate direction. I'm not even sure if he'd fit with Dragic, Waiters, and James Johnson. He'd have to act as a complementary piece to coexist, and wow, that's an expensive complementary piece when you already pay Dragic and Whiteside a lot of money, who aren't capable of being first or second options on a championship team. So it seems like Taylor has a lot of questions with just within himself about how he feels about a Carmelo Anthony trade, but we'll try to break this down. David, Carmelo Anthony, his name's out there. Phil Jackson is saying that he thinks that he'd be better off somewhere else, not in New York City, not with the New York Knicks. Would you make a deal if you're Pat Riley for Carmelo Anthony?
If I was Pat Riley, I would not make that deal. I think there's certainly some appeal there. I think obviously Miami's looking for a big name player. We talked about in our previous podcast how that could be a guy like Gordon Hayward, how he might be the face of the franchise moving forward if he signed with Miami. Carmelo already brings a lot of star name attraction there, but at the same time, he's at a point in his career where he's already way on the other side of 30. And I think it would take a major commitment from him to get to another level. And he might already be too firmly entrenched in doing what he's done over the past 14 years of his career. It isn't necessarily willing to make a change. And so one, he'd probably have to undergo a pretty rigorous conditioning test. I think, Carmelo has always been a little soft. I don't think he's necessarily been I don't think anybody's ever accused him of being in too good a shape. He's not necessarily known for being.
He's no James Johnson.
He's not. Yeah. I mean, he's very effective at doing what he does, and maybe he likes a little bit of extra girth or padding. Maybe that helps him when he's separating for those fadeaway jumpers. But at the same time, I think that's not going to fly in Miami. And I think Taylor brings up some really good points about how well he'd fit alongside guys like Dragic and Waiters and Whites. And now this is, of course, assuming that you might find a way to re-sign Deion Waiters. But if part of what this season's team, especially in the second half of the year, made them so appealing and so dynamic was the fact that they moved the ball so frequently, where you had so many guys who were really good options, most of that will probably change with Carmelo. Again, this is it would take a lot of buy-in on his part and willing to change, the way he's always operated. And that's by controlling the ball, holding on to it for a few seconds. It's not that he can't make the pass. It's not that he can't share the ball, but he does tend to hold on to it and create offense for himself. Sometimes he's more effective than others. This season was a particularly bad one. But, as good as Carmelo is as an individual scorer, I don't know that it would necessarily flow as well as part of this offense.
I mean, we've seen Carmelo Anthony be involved in offenses like that, or have coaches that asked him to be involved in an offense like that and just purposely slow it down. He doesn't like to play fast. You're absolutely right. He likes to get the ball. He likes to jab step two or three times. He likes to dribble around with the ball. He likes to hold it for 7 or 8 seconds at a time and then make a decision with it. That's how he plays. Still, you know how I love my hypotheticals.
Sure.
If Gordon Hayward re-signs with Utah, or even worse, goes to Boston, right? Jimmy Butler's not available for trade. Paul George is going to L.A., so he's not coming to Miami. And the Heat are short of options. And Carmelo Anthony is willing to waive his no-trade clause. He doesn't want to go to the Clippers anymore because the Clippers blew it up and Blake Griffin went to Oklahoma City or something. He's like, I don't want to deal with that team. I don't want to go there. I want to go to Miami. I'll waive my no-trade clause for Miami. I'll also waive the 15% trade kicker. Because, number one, if that no-trade clause still exists, and even if that 15% trade kicker exists, the Heat aren't making that deal. They can't do it. So He'd have to waive both, according to my math at least. And if he did that and said, I'd be willing to move to Miami, Phil Jackson basically would trade him for anything at that point. So if you're the Heat and Phil Jackson says, Winslow and pick for us at number 14, don't you kind of have to do it if you're Pat Riley? Like, would you be crazy to not trade Winslow in the 14th pick in the draft for Carmelo Anthony, a guy who can easily get you 20-plus a game for a season, who could be your number one scoring option? Riley has said great players find a way to play together. And you and I did a whole breakdown about the 15-16 Heat versus the 16-17 Heat in a potential playoff series in part one of the mailbag. And we ultimately came to the conclusion that the 16-17 Heat work better, but the 15-16 Heat were better because they had somebody like Dwayne Wade who could just get his own shot. Does Riley look at that and say, I just need somebody that can just go get buckets when I need him to? And that's Carmelo Anthony, and he's done that for his entire career. I don't know, man. Like, I don't think it happens. I don't think that Carmelo waives all that stuff just to come to Miami. I don't see that, especially after Dwayne Wade left, LeBron left. Like, those are his buddies. I don't see him coming out of the Heat. But then again, he could just say, like, those dudes had so much success, I'm just going to go to Miami and see what I can do there. Look what they did to James Johnson. Maybe they can get me a ring. Maybe that realization sinks in. He's like, I got to go get me a ring. Maybe I could do it in Miami. I don't know, man. It's if Phil Jackson calls Riley, and it's the opposite of kind of the question that I posed to you, if you're Riley, do you call Phil Jackson? If Phil Jackson calls Riley and says, Winslow in the 14th pick, I don't see how you don't do it. But that's a hypothetical.
It is. It's very difficult. I mean, I think, you know, obviously there is some there would be some reason to believe that Riley would be interested in making a move like that because of Melo and the star name that he brings, in a trade. But at the same time, I can't imagine Riley looking at this team and saying that he needs to change it so much, because basically you're just going to limit what everybody else does. Now, can you re-sign guys like Deion Waiters? Can you re-sign James Johnson as well as making a move for Carmelo Anthony? Because if that's the case, and then you can certainly make the argument, I think, or that makes the argument a little bit more strong.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many things that have to happen for Carmelo to even get traded. And he seems like he's going to wait out Phil Jackson as opposed to waive his no trade clause anyway.
Sure.
It is interesting.
Well, let's forget that, though. Let's forget about the whole, you know, the complexities of a deal, because this is obviously a hypothetical situation. Just even regardless of that, does Riley look at this roster and say he needs Carmelo at this point in his career as the whale? I just can't see it. I mean, I know that Riley wants a whale, but I think traditionally he's always picked up guys on the tail end of their careers for dirt cheap, not necessarily for whatever $20-something million a year like Carmelo's, you know, program to get next season.
Picking up Carmelo Anthony would mean a drastic reshaping of this roster, because you're right. He cannot function as this team functions. It would mean signing Carmelo Anthony and maybe blowing up this roster, trading a guy like Goran Dragic, letting a guy like Waiters walk, even maybe a guy like James Johnson, letting him walk. And you're hoping that you can trade for Carmelo, sign Blake Griffin, and build a front court of Melo, Blake Griffin, and Whiteside, and just play really slow. Or something, I don't even know. It would take like a dramatic reshaping of the roster, and I just don't see that. I don't see Carmelo Anthony as a good enough player to make reshaping the roster a good idea. Not at this point in his career.
No, and I'm sure that he has.
Dragic is a better player than Carmelo Anthony is right now. I think you and I have come to that conclusion.
And certainly a better fit for this team. He's the catalyst for this high-powered engine that we saw over the second half of this past season. So I just don't – Carmelo is a very good player. And obviously, like you pointed out, he has played effectively and efficiently in Olympic play and things of that sort. But that's in a system filled with other, you know, high-level all-star players. You know, it's different than asking him to kind of take a back seat to – you know, is he going to pass up a shot to Rodney Magruder? Is he going to just let, you know, Goran Dragic get to the hoop and not pass him out, not pass the ball to him? Is he going to check off Hassan Whiteside when he gets in the low post and tries to put up a hook shot? I mean, I don't know. I just can't see, you know, Carmelo fitting in that way. Now, that's not to say that I couldn't envision a world where, assuming that everything falls into place as far as the structure of a deal, whether or not Riley and Eric Spoelstra and Anthony Ellisberg couldn't just go and meet with him and try to gauge his level of interest, whether or not he's willing to do everything. And I hate to bring up personal things, but, you know, we heard reports early Monday that there was some problems in the Carmelo Anthony home. He's currently separated from his wife. There was no talk or no confirmation from Carmelo or anybody, but from what we understand, he's been separated from his wife, maybe potentially a divorce. Now, could that be the kind of impetus that he needs to just cut ties with New York and just be, you know, looking forward to possibly redefining the end of his career? Maybe.
We think he's in New York because of Lala in the first place, is why they forced that trade out of Denver instead of just waiting for the free agency. But I'm going to reshape this question. I'm going to ask you a new question. Where is Carmelo Anthony playing next season?
New York.
I think it's the Clippers. I just think something happens. I think there was too much smoke during the trade deadline. I think both teams want it. I think he would do it. I think he would move to L.A. If he's going to move from New York, it would be for L.A.
I mean, that makes sense. I could totally buy that. But at the same time, I don't know that the Clippers have anything to offer him. Maybe a sign and trade with Redick? I don't know.
That's Phil Jackson, I think, is desperate enough. You just be like, I'll take Luka Mbamute or whatever. Like, I'll just give me him and whoever your backup center is. We'll call it a day.
Yeah, that was an interesting statement by Michelle Roberts, the president of the Players Association. After Phil Jackson made his comments about Carmelo Anthony, you know, she issued a statement of her own saying, why is it possible for, you know, front office personnel to make statements like this about current players on their roster, and players can't make those kinds of statements
because they get fined. You
know, yeah, exactly. So yeah,
it's ridiculous.
Could you imagine the inverse
Phil Jackson's
of the players
saying, yeah. The idea that anybody even compared him to Pat Riley is insane. That dude is just high on peyote, out of his mind. He's a train wreck. I mean, this is some Machiavellian stuff going down in New York right now.
Like, but it's not even effective. Right? At least if you're going to be Machiavellian, and you can, you know, at least it's undermining and disingenuous, perhaps. But at least there's a goal in mind and one that's often achieved. This isn't the case. So like he's conniving and snakish in everything that he does, but it just winds up being ineffective. And
he
gave Carmelo
Anthony the no trade clause and the trade kicker.
Right, for no reason.
If you didn't want him, don't do that. Whatever.
Yeah.
All right. We'll move on to our next questions, but first I want to tell you about the Locked On NBA Network. Locked On Heat is a wonderful podcast, part of the wonderful Locked On NBA Network. Unfortunately, the Heat aren't in the playoffs, but we know that you're not only Heat fans, but you're basketball fans, you're NBA fans, and the playoffs are going on right now. Check out what the Locked On NBA Network has for you, because they've got Locked On Cavaliers, they've got Locked On Celtics, they've got Locked On Raptors, Locked On Wizards. There's a Locked On podcast for every team in the playoffs right now. So, and they're all daily, just like ours. So if you're trying to keep up with the playoffs and you want to know the ins and outs, just like you want to know the ins and outs of the Heat, and you want to get in-depth analysis for your playoff teams and the playoff series that are happening, check out the Locked On NBA Network and subscribe to whatever shows of the teams are in the playoffs right now. It's our recommendation. Okay. Next question comes from Billy Kuhn. Is it bad that I want Pat Riley to run this back, just stretch out Josh McRoberts' salary, waive Bosch, and keep this same core? So we kind of had a question similar to this in the part one of the mailbag, but Billy's question kind of opens us up to talk about salary, right? Because he talks about stretching McRoberts, waiving Bosch. So if they waive Bosch, they renounce all their free agents, blah, 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 without stretching McRoberts even, they'll have about $36 million in cap room. That might be enough to keep the core, right? We don't know how much James Johnson waiters are going to have to re-sign for. Yeah, but then there's Willie Reed, who is part of this core, right? He's the backup center. He is among Miami's top 8 or 9 players. I don't know if you can get all these guys back. I don't know if we're considering Luke Babbitt part of that, because he was playing at $1 million. If he re-signs, he's going to get the vet minimum, which I think is going to be $3.2 million, I believe, or something around that number. So you're going to have to triple his salary. I don't know if you can. And then you got everybody else's salaries, of course, like Dragic and Tyler Johnson, Whiteside, all their salaries move up. $36 million. If you stretch McRoberts, that gives you about $4 million more this season. So we're talking about $40 million. The only other way that this team has to open up money is to let Wayne Ellington go. But I think at $6 million, his deal is non-guaranteed next year. But so you can let him go and just get all $6 million back. But for $6 million for a knockdown three-point shooter, and probably the best three-point shooter on the roster right now, I think $6 million in this cap is worth it. That's a good value contract. So I don't know if you want to just waive him for just more cap space. What do you think?
I think he's certainly enticing at that amount of money. Overall, though, it's interesting that you saw this question and you considered it from the perspective of, you know, the structuring contracts and trying to fit everybody onto the roster, where I saw it as more as a, not necessarily a rhetorical question, but more of a subjective one. Like, as Billy, you know, phrases, is it bad to want Riley to run this team back? And to me, I looked at it from that perspective.
I like that perspective better. Let's go with that. My perspective sucks. We've talked enough about the salary cap. Your perspective is way better.
Well, I just, you know, to me, I look at this team, and like I said before, you know, it was such a great team. Certainly one of the most fun versions of the Heat that we've ever seen. For as much as people loved the Alonzo Mourning era and the great gritty defense and everything else, those, you know, final scores of 87 to 90 weren't necessarily as exciting as they could have been. You know, the Big Three era was one thing. But, you know, there's reasons why this team kind of brought back a similar feelings to the 2003-04 roster during Wade's rookie season, just because it was a team that wasn't expected to do a lot, but there was consistent effort, I think, was the hallmark of that team, what really defined them. And I think you could see a lot of that in this year's team as well. I mean, look, we saw the reports once the season was over and they found out they weren't in the playoffs, how everybody kind of bonded together, that there were guys, you know, tearing up and getting emotional in the locker room, that this was really, as cliche as it might sound, a camaraderie, a band of brothers that really had bonded over the course of the season when they were, you know, basically just a couple steps away from winning the lottery, all of a sudden to turn their season around and to change it in a historical fashion. I think there was just something great about this team. So to look at it from that perspective, Billy, I don't think it's bad at all. I think it would be great. Now, there are overarching questions that you could have, you know, regarding this team's potential. I mean, is it a contending team at this point in time? Probably not. They could win a lot of games. They could be, as we answered in yesterday's mailbag, one of the top four teams in the Eastern Conference, but not likely to win the Eastern Conference or to win a title. And maybe that's enough. And again, we've talked about this in other podcasts. It's something that's easier for us to say because there have been three championships over the last few seasons, because there were so many different title runs during the Big Three era, 4 years and or five complete, you know, title runs over the last 11 seasons or so. But, you know, for us, for you and I, and maybe for a lot of Heat fans, maybe those expectations are the same, that we're going to, you know, go into the finals or try to advance as far as possible. This team isn't likely built for that. But can you be satisfied watching this team make the playoffs every year, maybe winning somewhere between 45 and 48 games a season over the next 3 or 4 years, but knowing that they're going to continue to give the kind of effort that we saw over the last 40 something games of the season? And to me, I think that would be worth it. I think I'd rather have, I don't know, like think about it from the Big Three era perspective. Like, they would win a lot of games through the regular season, but most of that was just because they were so overwhelming as far as their level of talent is concerned. But they were really coasting, and we know that. We saw that with the exception of the 2012-2013 season when they went on that 27-game win streak and won 66 games. There was a lot of times during the regular season where they were just coasting and, you know, get geared up for the occasional big matchup or rivalry game or something like that. But, you know, over the last 41 games of this season, we saw this team give effort and try as hard as they could. And, you know, we saw James Johnson diving to the floor, you know, chasing after a loose ball, even in blowout type situations. They just never quit. They never gave up. And to me, that's really exciting and fun to watch. I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, if you're winning 48-ish games a season, you're basically what the Hawks have been the last several years. And that ends up, you know, contracts expire. People move on. Do you re-sign Waiters and James Johnson to 3-4-year deals, and then for 3 years you're winning 48 games, and then all of a sudden Waiters is 28, he's made maybe an all-star game or something, and he's like, you know what, I'm going to go to a team that's going to go win something, actually. I've had enough of winning 48 straight games. Like, I think you and I And I think a lot of Heat fans would appreciate just watching this team for another year and seeing what it looks like with a healthy Winslow and a fully healthy Richardson. Deion Waiters playing more than 46 games. Like, just this second half team for a full 82-game stretch. Because there was so much promise, because they missed out on the playoffs, we didn't get to see more of them. But I think it would get old after one season. I think it would get old for most people. And the reason I say that is, if you run this thing back, who on this team is getting a lot better? Who is able to turn the knob on this thing and go from 48 wins to a contender? Who's the John Wall on this team? Who's the Giannis Antetokounmpo on this team? Who's the Kawhi Leonard on this team? I don't know. And that's somebody that the Hawks didn't have. The Hawks made that... They got rid of Jeff Teague because they thought Dennis Schroeder had a chance to be that player. And he's not. He's very clearly not that player. But they gave up on Teague just to have the chance of finding that player because they were so desperate for him. And I don't know that the Heat have him. I mean, I'm a big fan of Winslow. But I haven't seen enough from him in one season in 18 games to say that he can be that player. Waiters? I don't know. How much better can Whiteside get? And even if he does get much better, can a center be that player for you in today's NBA? I think Dragic has got... He's maybe got another year or two left in his prime. I don't know. I don't know. James Johnson's 30. You know what I mean? Like, he's... This very well could have been the best season of his career, this last one that we just saw. Even if he can get you, if you re-sign him for 3 or 4 years and he gives you 80 to 90% of what he just gave the Heat, that's a good contract. That's a good player. But I don't know that he's getting a whole lot better. I don't know.
So they've
got the 14th pick, and that's why I think it's really this 14th pick is really important. That's why they got to maybe get a player who has that potential.
You think that there'd have to be progress made, that even if they were just duplicative of the effort level, and again, like I said, you know, winning 40-something games every year, that you'd get eventually tired of that, and you'd think that, you know, that effort would eventually tape off, that the success would taper off, and that would grow boring for Heat fans.
There needs to be literally just one player who provides enough hope and enough of a spark that player can be a future franchise player, a future Dwayne Wade. Like, there needs to be somebody that can have that spark and can provide that hope that the other players rally around that player and they don't leave after 3 or 4 years. They just, like, what player on the Bucks is leaving Giannis right now? Like, none of them under their own free will, right? Like, if they can re-sign, they're re-signing with Giannis. You need that kind of player. That's what helped the Spurs last after Tim Duncan. They had Kawhi. You know, Greg Popovich stayed. Tony Parker, Ginobili, they stayed for another season because basically Kawhi Leonard. If the Heat don't have a player that could provide that hope, I think it gets old. I think just winning 48 games gets old.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they can win 48 games. As long as they have the hope, it's fine.
Yeah, because I was thinking about that. You know, what separates that from a team like the Spurs that has won 50-plus games or the percentage equivalent of that in lockout shortened seasons over the last, 21 seasons? And that's the fact that it had a generational-type talent in Tim Duncan.
Kawhi Leonard can walk into any playoff series and be the best player in that playoff series. And that provides enough hope that they can go be any seed and win the finals.
Okay. I see your point. No, I see your point. I mean, yeah. No, I guess you're right. In the long-term view, you'd probably want somebody to either be a generational-type talent or somebody that can continue to show signs of growth and the potential to reach another level.
So I'm a fan of running this thing back for a year, but the problem with it is you can't just re-sign Waiters and James Johnson on one-year deals. They're not going to accept that, right? Especially at the market value that they're going to be able to get. If they take a small hometown discount, it's going to come with the caveat of taking a longer-term deal. So if you do that, if you re-sign these guys, you're basically saying, this is our core, this is our group, because they're not going to have a whole lot of cap space to spend anywhere else.
Right.
So either you believe that Waiters can be that guy, or that there's a guy on the roster, or that you're going to be able to pick that guy at number 14. And that's really it. All right.
That segues perfectly into our last question, right?
It does. Do you think Pat Riley would be able to convince either Deion Waiters or James Johnson to take on a smaller contract? Here's my favorite part of this question. What would your pitch to them be if you were Pat Riley? This is from an anonymous emailer. They didn't put a name on this, so good question, Mr. or Mrs. Anonymous emailer. What would your pitch be to Dion Waiters? Let's start there.
I think it's the same that's been apparently the case all season long. You know, one of the comments that really stood out from Waiters' exit interview and conversation with media early Monday morning was that, you know, apparently everything Pat Riley had discussed with him had come in Waiters' words to fruition. Like, he had talked to him about being able to take another level in his development, being able to continue to grow. Now the next step is, I think, making that a more permanent way, a more permanent level of development for Waiters. And that's to say, the past four seasons in between whatever he experienced in Cleveland or Oklahoma City, that's all behind him. Now it's the next and last phase of his career where he becomes a Heat lifer. And that's to continue to build and things like that. You know, he's got a family, a son that he's very loving and devoted towards. Make this a home, not just for Dion, but also for his family, to make them a permanent fixture here in the South Florida landscape, you know, to have them put roots in and take another level. I mean, the Philadelphia streets that helped create a guy like Dion Waiters, you know, he probably wants to leave those. As much as they helped define him, he probably wants to move past them. And I think he can find a place that's out in the sun and very exciting. And again, has embraced them as much as they have this past season. To me, I think that's the key part of whatever pitch you make, is to say, look, you found happiness here. Now it's about continuing to build on that, establishing permanency, and continuing to redefine your career so that people remember not just what happened in Cleveland, or that you were a high draft pick that didn't necessarily live up to your potential, but that eventually you found who you were here in South Florida, and that you are capable of leading a team to a championship.
I love it. I think you're absolutely on. You've been bounced around the league. You've been Cleveland, Oklahoma. Like, you found a spot in Miami that you're comfortable. Your family loves it. Let's get you in a long-term deal, but it's not going to be $18 million a year. And to me, my pitch to him is, look, there's no all-NBA players that you have to play in between, right? There's no just established LeBron or Durant or Westbrook. We'll get you in the best condition of your career. You know, you're going to play more than 46 games next season. You're going to be in the best shape you've ever been. You're your spiritual successor to your hero, Dwayne Wade. Mm-hmm. And the last 2 minutes of every game are yours. They're yours. Take less money, you'll be happier. I'm offering him $4 million or 4 years for $44 million. It's $11 million a year. 4 years.
Yeah, I think that's a realistic contract. I think that's something that, again, yeah, 4 years, you can prove that you know, you're that kind of player who deserves that, and then there's always more money available at the end of that deal. But yeah, this is your chance to show that wasn't a fluke, that you are the kind of player that we want here on this team, one that can carry this team. And I think that's absolutely fair.
I think you can even structure it in a way that he can opt out. You give him an option, player option after the third year. Test the market if you're going to be that much better. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
James Johnson, what's your pitch to him? Film of last year and look at photos of yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I think from everything he said, you know, in his exit interview, I think it's basically very similar to what you know we said with Dion. And, you know, he even talked about that. You know, he made specific comments about that. Now, I think you can look at whether or not he'll take the quote-unquote hometown discount.
The comments where he said, I actually want to sit down with Dion and Pat Riley and basically say, he's basically saying, I want to figure out the math to keep us here. And that quote's been circling around on Twitter a lot. Is like, he wants to sit down with Dion and they want to and Pat Riley and figure out the math to keep them there. But the other part that I feel like is getting left out a lot is how to keep us here and add to this team. I don't know what that hometown discount means. I don't know what kind of player he's envisioning adding to this team. But he's saying, I want to take enough. I don't want just Dion and I to take up the rest of your cap space. I want Dion and I to take up enough cap space where you can also go get another player.
Interesting. I didn't see those comments. Now, what I saw was a report where he said, and this is his quote, the grass is always greener on the other side. That's the only thing that's going on in the back of my head right now as far as whether or not he's looking at other teams. I might not have the same opportunities that I had this year to get out of the box and play the way I feel like I can to contribute to winning. who knows if I can get that with another team. Money has nothing to do with that. I love basketball. I love the game, and I love it here. I love the culture here. I'm very passionate about this place. That sounds like a guy who has found a level of comfort here that he has not elsewhere. I mean, you consider his level or the career he's had, you know, the couple seasons in Toronto, the time in Sacramento, the time in Memphis. He's bounced around a lot. He's been a journeyman. He was a D-League player for a bit. Again, just like what we were talking about with Dion, there's a chance here to establish something to show that that wasn't a fluke and to establish some kind of a permanency there and to show that this is the kind of player that you really were, that you were meant to be all along. And only by, you know, by the grace of Pat Riley and Bill Foran, do you get to be that player here in Miami. So you should be appreciative and take a little bit less money so that you can continue to build on that.
And the quote I was talking about was from Miami Herald's Barry Jackson. Tweeted, James Johnson said he is not only open to sitting with Riley and waiters for talk on them staying and adding a piece, but hopes that happens. So, and adding a piece was what I was talking about there. James Johnson, the pitch is simple. Like, you wouldn't be in the league if it weren't for our training staff, everything that you just said. Take less money than what you could make, right? Somebody's going to come out and offer James Johnson $15, $16 million a year. Come back for $10, $11, $12 million a year, you know? But we'll all stay with this training staff that got you in the best shape of your life. We'll extend your career by 3 years. And you'll make up that money on the back end. You'll stay in the NBA longer. Stay here. Take less money, but you get to play longer. It's a simple pitch.
It is.
I think we nailed it.
I think so, too. I mean, look, we were responsible for Waiters Peninsula in the first place. I don't see why don't they bring us into negotiations. I think we've got the passion. We've got the vision. And somehow we'll figure out a way to trade for Kelly Oubre, too. Oh, we definitely have the guts.
We'll get Kelly Oubre somehow.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we trade for him. All right. Well, that's all we have for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. Get in touch with the show on Twitter at LockedOnHeat or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions, comments, or sponsorship opportunities. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. If you're not subscribed already, please do so. Get the podcast automatically every day. Go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, awesome.